Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsessions
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, Jackie Cation here. You're about to listen to The Dork Forest. You know the websites, dorkforest.com, thedorkforest.com. JackieCation.com has the links to everything. Merch, the new album, my other podcast, videos of me doing stand-up. Dorkforest.com has all the notes and the video that you can watch of this show. Traditionally, I tell you to donate to The Dork Forest, but it is November and December. I ask that you donate to a local food bank because you should. You should do it all year, but what the heck? If you are donating to the Dork Forest using the PayPal link that gives every month, you can turn it off and turn it back on. You can do a matching to your food bank and donate to me as well. But all the money that I get from the donations from November and December, I'll give to my local food bank. And so I will get all of that sweet, sweet karma. Other than that, you can buy merch. You can, for Christmas, there's new t-shirts and stuff. But whatever it is, The Dork Forest, super fun, always available. I'm sure there's things I'm forgetting to say, probably Bandcamp, but let's get into the show.
Hey, Jackie Cation, I'm in my garage. We have to talk very quickly because Ophira Eisenberg has 54 minutes. And I don't know if anybody listens to my other podcast, but let me tell you something. I love 1 hour. So 6 minutes shy is not going to kill me, is what I'm saying. But I love it. Welcome to the program, Ophira Eisenberg.
Hello, Jackie Cation. So nice to hear and see you.
And I have a new album out. People should probably know right now. It's only on Pandora. But by the time this comes out, actually, I think worldwide today.
Yes! Congrats.
Very exciting.
Congrats.
And then Staycation is what it's called. And everyone should buy it and watch it for free on YouTube with ads. But then I guess I get some sort of revenue.
That's right.
And then, but nobody's donating because it's November and December in the Dork Forest. I don't ask you to donate because
it's too much.
Find a fucking food bank. Find a fucking food bank. That's yep. Three Fs. Let's get into your dork. Or Ophira, O-P-H-I-R-A-E is your handle on all the things. Is that correct?
That is correct. There's a woman named Ophira E. Dot who beat me to add Ophira. But
oh god,
you know, we've had words, but we've worked it out.
And your last name is Eisenberg, so it's fine. Ophira E makes sense.
Thanks.
And is there an OphiraEisenberg.com?
There sure is. That I have recently been interested in updating again. It was weird having a website for 18 months that you're like, what am I going to put on this?
I'm interested in making this something that you people could use. But Ophira Eisenberg, one of my favorite comics, by the way, ladies and germs. So people should go find
you.
Your stand-up comedy, for it is a delight.
And I have a new album almost done.
Oh, really?
Yes.
When who's that coming out with?
That's coming out with 800-pound Gorilla Records.
As well. So just start haunting them.
Exactly. Buy everything they put out. Because clearly they have impeccable taste.
Impeccable. Kilmartin's album came out 2 weeks ago.
Exactly.
My album's coming out on the 16th of November. Yours is coming out hopefully very soon?
Very soon. Yeah, we just finished. I okayed the artwork. Okay. You know, which is very funny, as you know, artwork is a hilarious thing right now because unless you are pressing albums, like no one's making a CD right now. That's almost a joke.
I have a box of them in my
house. Oh my God. Absolutely.
So you're just like, the art could be anything. How about my name?
Yeah, the art has to be like very, like something that would look good in a 1-inch by 1-inch square on a digital screen.
I like the apocalyptic scene behind you in your Vancouver
hotel.
Hotel room.
I'm in Vancouver and hotel art, as I've always appreciated your takes on those when you're on the road. is always something. A matter of fact,
it is.
And the art actually is such a reflection on the place you stay, because I stay in a few places where the only art has been the emergency procedure on the door.
Oh, It does. It does. It feels artistic at that level. If that's all there is, yeah, well, you know, have you seen a lot where they're paint? They're doing an accent wall, and they're calling that art.
Oh.
Yes.
So I also, this is a very kind of what I'm just going to call like generic hotel, but this piece of abstract art, although it is just abstract if you look close, but from the zoom reflection angle, it does look like a depiction of what happened in Vancouver and much of the West Coast during 2020, which is it was on fire. It looks like the charred remains of a redwood in the foreground of smoke rising.
We have a different Rorschach test. My Rorschach test tells me that that looks like a kind of a Terminator kind of guy.
Ooh.
or a firefighter. And
putting it out. And it's putting out the fire.
Glass half full, Cation.
Look at you.
Hello.
Look at you.
Ha-ha.
But I love, you know, you've probably stayed. I know you're out there again, so you're staying in hotel rooms again.
Yes, I am.
But every once in a while when I travel, someone puts me in like a boutique hotel, and those ones I hate. I hate it when there's no bath, but there is a guitar.
I hate a boutique hotel. We are one. I mean, it's like, not that they aren't amazing. They are genuinely the layout. You're like living inside the Louvre, but I don't care.
Oh.
I want it to look the same. I am the accidental tourist, sadly.
And it's always they're like, we're like counterculture. You're like, no, you're like counter comfort. Like it's always just a parachute for a shower curtain. And I stayed in one where the art was a old tax return stapled to a wall.
Okay, I don't know that you were staying in a boutique hotel. I feel like you were in a Super 8 outside. Was there also the artistic bullet hole in the window? Because that's what that feels like.
It was an H&R Block that had a room upstairs.
I stayed in Austin, Texas. I stayed in a Super 8 once that had a bullet hole in the window. And I went back to the check-in and I was like, any other room? any other room that doesn't have a hole in the window.
You can't do that. I stayed at a place, I can't remember where it was, but they were redoing, they had me on the first floor and they were redoing it, the exterior. So my room had a sliding glass door that in a different world would be onto some little patio, but they had covered the outside with plastic as if, as if you were
and
painting.
Paper.
So it looked like my room had been sealed for a crime scene. I was like, I can't.
I don't mean to be a jackass about this, but someone is paying at least $120 a night or something.
That would be a cool thing for a murderer to do, to like just set it up. Hey, I know I'm going to murder you, but a day before I like to go and get the room ready for the crime.
It feels like a Monk episode. Remember?
Yes, of course.
I think the Monk episode was in Hawaii and there was a team of women who murdered somebody, but they were amazing. They were the women who cleaned the rooms. And they were this crack team that he was so proud of. And then he realized, oh, you're also really good at hiding. Murder.
You were extremely skilled in making things look like they're clean,
DNA
rather than
gone.
Actually being clean. Yes.
Anyway, so we're talking. I'm excited about it. We have six less minutes, so let's do this. I need to talk about your dorkdom, which you think you were like. I think you would call them guilty pleasures. No such thing here in the Dork Forest.
Thank you.
And so, what kind? And it's books. So
it's
always have this opinion: if you're reading anything, even if
it's amazing,
Laurie Kilmartin's son hated to read. I was like, but he likes anime, so I was like, what about manga? Because he's also
absolutely
a drawing kid, and now he reads a lot of manga.
So, and, you know, this is true. Yeah. Many, many years ago now, seven, it's not that long. but when I went to, I published a memoir, and I remember when we were just talking about marketing, and I was like, well, I want it to be like this. And it was very much impressed upon me that, do not worry, men do not buy books.
What?
Yeah, and I know that's like a gross stereotype, but it is.
It's a sweeping statement, and we, of course, know men who do buy books.
Yeah.
But my brother Phil is an avid, avid consumer of literature, but all Audible.
Ah, see? Interesting. Yep.
Interesting. So,
So
men don't particularly buy, they don't browse bookstores and just buy.
Yeah, and my husband, I mean, there's books all over our house, but for him, none of the words are not in a bubble.
Andy has a pull list and has a lot of comic books, and I read the comic books as well, because they are great.
Yep.
But and then he has books. He has, you know how everybody has that stack of books that they should be reading?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God,
And then there's the stack of books that you're rereading, and then there's the stack of books that you're willing to now read.
Yes, exactly.
And it's not the books that you should be reading, sadly.
No, that's the perfect setup for what I'm talking about.
Let's hear it. What are you reading right now?
So this is the thing. Okay, I'm reading.
What do you like?
This is what I like. I like escapism. I love escapism. And, you know, I grew up in a world where we hadn't figured out the word trigger yet, in the sense that we use it now.
Canada? Is that that word?
No, I feel like the idea of being triggered as being introduced into like the everyday lexicon, that's gotta be a decade.
New. Yeah. Yeah. That's new.
Yeah. So that's the word I needed. And because I like escapism because I honestly want to escape reality. Okay. Like, I understand how all these women love true crime. I can't handle it. It makes me feel deeply sick inside my stomach.
Well, I will say this, people's definition of escapism, and I've only realized it relatively in the last probably six times I've done a Dork Forest about horror movies and books and stuff, is that people who have anxiety and love horror, it actually, for some reason, bleeds it off. And I don't understand how that happens, because for me, turns out super scary. Can't sleep.
Other things.
Yeah. I don't want any part of true crime because it's too, I need it to not be real.
I need to not be real. Yeah. I love, honestly. So it makes me a very pedestrian television watcher, media consumer, and reader.
But the thing is if you think pedestrian, we could, if we wanted to be so judgmental as to say, everybody loves true crime. Everybody loves horror.
True.
You guys are the real peds over here. I'm reading space opera and romance novels and westerns and mysteries that all, by the way, end well.
Yeah, that's what I like. Guys, I love a happy ending. Right. I don't want parents dying. I don't want cancer. I don't want pets dying. Like, you know why? Because I've experienced all that stuff. Like, and then I have a kid, so I can't have kids getting hurt. Like, I need things. I don't want unresolved endings. I want things to tie up. And I love mystery. I love detective. I love adventure.
Did you ever see Homeward Bound with the dogs?
No.
The dogs coming over. Homeward Bound is about Michael J. Fox as a dog and other dogs. there's two dogs and a cat, and they all have voices. And I was watching it with my four-year-old niece when it first came out on VHS 1,000 years ago. And I was literally crying because I thought that we had lost, spoiler alert, Homeward Bound. This is a children's movie. I thought we had lost the Irish setter and because he was old. And
oh, no.
And I'm choking up a little bit here.
Of course.
But all of a sudden so I am literally silent tears streaming down my face. And my four-year-old niece comes over and puts her hand on me. She said, he's okay. He's coming. And I was like, oh, my God. And then he came over the hill. And I laughed and cried and we hugged each other.
Yes.
And it was ridiculous. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So what you're going through right now emotionally is me all the time. So I really relate to this.
Yes.
I feel like my tears and emotions are like so a thin layer of humanity is on the front of it. So when it comes to entertainment, I like things that aren't like reality. So, and I like mysteries, but so I was really into Lawrence Block. If you know Lawrence Block,
Lawrence Block, B-L-O-C-K.
Yeah. So, I mean, started writing in the 70s, as far as I know. And, I think his first stuff was the protagonist was Matthew Scudder, and he was an alcoholic ex-cop working as an unlicensed private investigator in Hell's Kitchen, New York. I mean, so many things just ticked off all the boxes. Just so many things.
So did. Oh my God, that's hilarious.
So then...
Yeah.
So then he wrote another series that I got really into that's funny, it's light, and it's The Misadventures of a Gentleman Burglar named Bernie Rodenbaugh. And it's very witty. It's pretty sophisticated and witty. And it's still from like late 70s and on. And I like it. This is like he's an accidental detective as well. It's set in New York. He owns a bookstore.
I feel like you... I, too. Do you feel like you would like to be an accidental detective?
Oh, my God. It's my dream. I mean, sometimes I think I am.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes when I'm at a public setting and I'm able to get close enough to someone to see their phone and read their first and last name and something about them, I'm like, I could. Mm-hmm. Isn't it crazy that I just got all that information? I'm like, I'm more, wait. That's like me on, me being high is just being like, I'm more observant than anyone.
Harriet the Spy, when I was a kid, I lost my mind. Anyway, is his name Reed Ferguson? Is that the name of the character? Reed Ferguson, the boxing private, Bernie Rodenbaugh is the burglar, but is Reed Ferguson the name of the private investigator mystery?
No.
Maybe. No, it's a different, I just Googled.
Oh, and, yes. So the one for
Matthew Scudder?
Matthew Scudder. I forget all the names.
There we go.
The Sins of the Fathers, I think, was the first one. And then Burden Runbarr, they're all like the burglar who blah. So it's like the burglars can't be choosers. The burglar
A is for alibi. B is for burglar. C is for cat in a hat. Yeah.
And I like, too, that even though it was written, I mean, and I say this because things that were written, you know, late 70s, early 80s, they can have a specific tone that doesn't feel current, potentially. But I feel like Lawrence Block is pretty current. And I also love that his partner in crime and his soulmate is a woman who's super smart and she's a lesbian. So there's no tension there.
But right, so there's no sexy times.
There's no sexy,
with each
but
other.
She's constantly... doing her own thing.
Does he get laid?
Occasionally, and it's really given a light touch.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, I enjoy that myself.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a dick joke.
Okay. So now I don't know how you are with sleep, but I feel like I do something called intermittent sleeping.
Oh, God. Well, you have a child.
Yeah, but it's also, it doesn't have anything to do with my kid anymore. It has to do with my brain. So I can fall asleep in 2 seconds.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Me too. Do you stay asleep? No.
That's the problem.
Oh.
That's the problem.
There's the trouble. Have you ever read a 70s series that was made into a TV series called Spencer for Hire?
Oh my goodness, I sort of missed it, but I feel like I would like this.
You would like it, especially if you start at the beginning, because remember back in the late 60s and early 70s, all of those mystery novels were all 180 to 220 pages.
Exactly, yes.
So you're done. All of a sudden you're like, oh, well, that's all that. And everything I know about Boston, Massachusetts is because of Spencer for Hire. So everything I know about Boston, Massachusetts, no longer current.
Right.
So, but he has, there's probably 20, I think somebody is still writing them, but I would say the first 14 or 15 are very good. And he has, and it's so funny because he's on the right side of history.
Yeah.
But they're written in a world that we all know about where we're all dipped in white supremacy. So there's a tiny bit of a parade for what a great guy he is, right?
Right.
The guy who wrote him, spacing his name, because the character, the guy who wrote it was an English professor at like Boston University or something.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's funny you say it because my brain went to, you know, and this was 10 years ago, I read all of them, was Kinky Friedman. Kinky Friedman wrote a huge...
I read those about 10 years ago, too.
Read them all. Loved them. Totally got into them. It was really my style.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and Kinky Friedman, I think, is like on the right side of history. But I think if I were to reread those books right now, I might be like, okay.
They don't hold up entirely. They you know, it's, there's, I was in Australia in probably 2005 or 2004, and I needed a book. And there was a biker dude at an airport bookstore who was buying a mystery novel. And
like,
I was
what
like,
is he having? I'll yes. have what he's having.
And it was, and I have remembered and forgotten the name of this book and author and series more times than I can tell you. But it is essentially, he is a bouncer in Sydney and he is not a good guy. So it's kind of like it's a little rapey. He beats people up. He helps people eventually. He is not a, he's essentially, it's, it could be a slice of life of my cousin. I was just like, no, not necessarily. And so I only read one of those, but I have a hard time once I find a new author of not at least giving them four or five
shots
books.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
The thing I like about the, made me think of it, the thing I like about the Rodenbar series where he's a burglar is that I also love that kind of playing with, you know, what is the good guy and what is the bad guy? And he's totally a good guy, but he knows he also has stolen things for his own use.
But he's a prostitute with a heart of gold. I don't mind that guy. Yeah. I will read that over over and over again. Please tell me that. Is there a blonde one? Is there a brunette one? Is that guy, is he Mexican? Is he, you know, I would like a guy from India. I don't care.
Absolutely. Okay. I was reading those. I was reading those. I love them. They were really satisfying. Often I would look forward to, you know, ooh, it's time to go to bed soon. I couldn't wait. But I also, because I was saying that I fall asleep very quick, I need the 180 pages or whatever, because I'm going through things like four pages at a time sometimes.
Right. The short, you need a short one. And so let something happen before I fall asleep.
Exactly. And just a through line that I don't have to think too hard about like, oh, what deep, intense, yet subtle thing happened that I need to remember. It's pretty straight ahead. But then I got to tell you that I had like a pretty intense anxiety attack over the course of the pandemic quarantine. And it was related to the fact that as a cancer survivor, I had breast cancer, and as a cancer survivor, based on the decisions I made for my treatment, I have to still go in every year for a mammogram and testing. And it sends me out, I can't handle it. It always just sends me to the worst place. And then it was on top of that COVID, and I didn't want to go anywhere that was a healthcare facility, especially with people that were at risk to begin with.
Right. But you didn't want to give it. You didn't want to get it. And your head spins and goes worst case scenario anyway. So,
yeah.
Boo!
And I hate it. And so I do whatever I can to make it. I'm not going to use the word okay, because it's just
palatable? Palatable?
Just so I can literally walk in there. I do whatever I can to make my feet walk me in there. And so I brought my Kindle with me, and I was like, oh, it's okay, because I'll read my mystery novel, because the waiting rooms just take forever and ever and ever. And you go in for one part of the testing, and then they send you it's a labyrinth of waiting rooms. It's like a maze, and you go to different waiting rooms.
You go to different layers of waiting rooms kind
of
thing?
Yes, a honeycomb of waiting rooms.
Boo.
And it takes a while. And I've done it so often, knock on wood, which means that things have been generally positive. I've done it so often that I've memorized and also observed all the different ways that the honeycomb works. I'm like, okay, that person means this. And if they have a clipboard that looks like this, it means that. And so I'm also obsessed with the workings of it.
You are a detective. Yes.
But for my own emotional evil.
Right, right. You're beating yourself up with it because you're just like, yes. Oh, well, this means it's not going to happen because they have the wrong clipboard.
That's right.
Or whatever.
Exactly. Okay. So I was like, it's fine. It's fine. I'm just going to focus on this reading. And I just couldn't even focus on a dumb, not Uh-oh. Dumb. I couldn't even
it
focus
was taken,
on.
It was somehow it got taken away.
Yeah. So I went the next level.
I've been there. That's blue. So what happened?
So then I discovered, I quickly went on a search and I was like, funny mystery, female lead. Because the one thing that is missing from the things that I just mentioned is always been missing my whole life, which is
ladies.
Like, why can't the woman, I mean, my favorite movie, and I know this dates me and I don't care, and I still watch it 7 to 8 times a year, is Raiders of the Lost Ark. Do I want to be Marion? Yes, I do, but only the first half.
Oh, why is that?
Because that whole ending where she's just screaming, Indy, Indy, help me, Indy, doesn't match with who she was at the beginning.
Right, right. Oh, it's a classic. It's a classic boy director bullshit. And Spielberg did it to his own girlfriend in Temple of Doom, where she wouldn't stop screaming. And you're just like, you can't like her. Nobody liked her in that movie because she was screaming. That's not why you go out with her. You don't go out with her because she screams like that. So why don't you put the thing that you like about her in the fucking movie?
I know.
Anyway,
can you have this character who, like, wins a shot contest in Tibet, punches out her old love the second he walks into her bar, you know, I'm your goddamn partner, and then, like, devises a way to, like, try to drink a, you know, French defector to the Nazi party and escape with a knife, and then just Indy, Indy, help me, Indy for the last.
Yeah, yeah.
Unfair.
No.
So
unfair.
You're
right.
But of course, who do you really?
Hard agree.
So who do I want to be in that movie? Indiana Jones. But I chose Marion because that's all I had.
Right. That's all you have. That's all. That's I want to be Han Solo. Speaking of Harrison Ford. Yeah. I didn't even want to be Princess Leia because she was doing tactics. I was like, there's no fun in tactics. I want to fly an X-Wing. I want to fly the Millennium Falcon. Get off my ass.
That's right.
And yeah.
Get this long robe off of me and let's get going.
I have women character books for you, but go.
Oh, please.
Light,
so then, yes.
Awesome. Yeah.
Send them over. So I attached on to this series, which is the most bubblegummy, but it's fun.
What is
it? It's now this is the kind of book that you find right under the Daniel Steele in the bookstore.
And I tried to read Daniel Steele. Don't diss a Danielle. Go.
Okay, so it's Janet Ivanovich is the author, and it's the Stephanie Plum series.
Yeah. I have tried. Should I try again?
Well, so here's the thing. Kind of. I think the first one is so enjoyable. So the premise, of course, is that it's a female lead. This Stephanie has lost her job. She's single. Her marriage fell apart. She's about to lose her apartment. She lost her job working in a lingerie factory or store. And so her backup plan is that she gets a job from her sleazy cousin as a bounty hunter for his bail bonds company. So she began it's set in Trenton, New Jersey.
Oh, God. All right. Yeah.
So, and then there's a former ex-boyfriend who's a cop. And then there's like a more kind of vigilante bounty hunter. And both these guys are in love with her. So it's also like a bit of a bodice ripper.
Yeah.
Mixed in to a sort of action bounty hunter.
Sometimes I like my romance novels to be all romance and no action, and my action to be all action and occasion. Like, I read The Lee Child.
Yeah.
Military police one. Jack Reacher.
Yeah,
because my mother-in-law gave me those, and I probably read a dozen of them. He usually gets laid around page 445. It's pretty quick. And then he keeps moving, and then bad guys get served and murdered, by the way, Jack Reacher. Jack Reacher is not interested in due process. He is more interested in, you're a pedophile? Allow me to murder you.
Right.
And you're like, okay, all right. And
he reminds me, I haven't seen the last movie, something I should revisit.
I think there's a series, too, that's actually supposed to be better. But Yeah. But I will say this. So I'm looking at, there's different things. Yeah. So there's Georgette Heyer wrote probably a dozen mystery novels in the 1920s with women and they're like, do you ever see Room with a View?
Yes. It's still my goal.
Totally. It's Room with a View, but with a mystery. And there's probably 10 of them, and 4 of them are good.
Yeah.
So you might as well give it a shot. But they were all written in like the 20s, the 40s, the 60s. So Georgette Heyer is really good. The spy novels written by Helen McGinnis.
Oh, yeah. Now we're talking.
McInnes. She was living through the Blitzkrieg, writing about British spies in the late 30s. So it's 1941, the first one's published. And so it has this sort of, it might be a little too heavy because it has this heaviness.
Yeah.
She's living through the bombings.
Yes.
And she's writing about Nazis 2 years ago. And so.
It's wild.
Yeah. So a couple of them are good. I had to stop. She wrote some romance novels that were terrible. I do not recommend the Helen McGinnis romance novels. But here's what you're looking for. 1928, written in the 80s and 90s. There's 21 of them.
Oh, yeah.
Miss Fisher's Murder Mysteries.
Oh, I started watching those.
The books are better, and the TV show is adorable. So there's 3 seasons of the TV show. The books, she, it turns out, is if she were, and I've said this before, if she were a Dungeons and Dragons character, she would be maxed out. She has charisma, she has agility, she has intelligence, she has wisdom. She is rich, she's good looking, she can ride a horse, she can fly a plane. She's on the right side of history. Her name is Phryne Fisher. And Phryne Fisher, I have probably 6 of her books. I've read 14 of them because I couldn't get them from Australia. So I put them on Kindle. And, They are awesome. And they also have kind of a glimpse, like the last 2 I read talked about the history of Chinese immigration into Australia in the early teens, in the late 18, well, from the gold rush, because they had a gold rush in 1849 as well, 1850.
Yeah.
For some reason,
right,
the earth decided to show us all their gold in 1849 in California and in Australia. And everybody was like, let's go get some of that.
And yeah, so, exactly. Now we move.
Now, yep. We, yeah, rotating. I
mean, speaking of which, you know, that just reminds me that, you know, there's this huge problem in Australia. I think Australia most pronounced just because of the size of it. We should all become truck drivers in Australia or really anywhere in the world right now because there's all these natural resources and gas and oil and gold that is can't get around.
It can't get anywhere. Because it's too big. But it's so interesting. I knew a guy, and this I digress. There's no time to digress, but here we go. I know a guy who, 55, 60 years old, he said, you know what? I'm sick of living in L.A. He was a writer. He was a TV writer. He's like, I want to be an over-the-road truck driver. And he's been doing it. He got divorced. He had a bad change of life kind of dude thing. And now he has back problems. I was like, let me tell you something about an over-the-road truck driver. That's a young person's gig.
Yeah.
To sit for 12 hours a day.
No, it can't be good for you. That's not good for
you. That's not ideal. I don't know how you fix that, but it isn't great.
Yeah.
But the other book, and this is a more historical fiction, and is the Flashman series. I don't know if you have ever read the Flashman series, written in the 50s. And Harry Flashman is a terrible person. And he always wins. He is given slightly his comeuppance. Like Andy Ashcraft gave me the first Flashman book when we were dating.
Yeah.
He was like, this is an amazing. It's the history of the British. The first book is the British invasion of Afghanistan. Guess how that went? Anyway, so much like it went every time anyone tried to invade Afghanistan.
Yeah, you know, so one of the reasons I think I attached on to this Stephanie Blum series, which again is super entertaining, but it is wildly unrealistic. And sure. When you are in a state of trauma, awesome. When I feel a little bit better, I'm like, what the? Come on now. Really? She only eats donuts and cake?
Right. And yet she's super hot. Super hot.
Super hot. It's kind of funny how they never quite, she just describes sometimes what kind of shirt she's put on, but she never describes her body, which I, you know, sometimes you read these things and it's like, she could tell the way he gazed at her was that, you know, was like no woman. It's not, none of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Is it written by Janet Ivanovich, right? So it's written by a woman.
It's written by a woman. As it turns out, her son also writes and I think has contributed to some of her series.
Oh,
24 books. There's 24. Right. I've read about half. I would say it's still like, it's easy. And it's wearing on me a little bit because the good thing is that it's eccentric. It's fun. It's ridiculous. There's some witty lines. The action is moving. She's also kind of bad at her job. Her car's always getting blown up.
Like, oh my God, that's hilarious.
There's tons of explosions. There's a couple pretty gross, grossly racist depictions of some of the characters, side characters.
Sure, of course. Why wouldn't there be? Why wouldn't there be some horrible racism written? And I'm sure there's this whole weird thing about white supremacism where you're like, no, I thought I was being funny. And you're like, yeah. We weren't. Nobody was being funny.
And I feel like the volume on that is going up in the books. But
really?
Yeah. The first one especially was like, oh my goodness, this is such a fun adventure. And then I actually even thought, why hasn't anyone translated this into a movie?
Yeah.
And it turns out they did, and it was a flop. And it was many years ago, but of course I was like, I got to watch this. And it was terrible.
Right.
I could barely watch it, which was so too bad because I had a totally different picture of it in my head. And it was starring Katherine Hagel.
Oh, I love Katherine Hagel.
Yes. So she's had potential, but.
You know, there's a woman who I did an episode with her, The Dork Forest, who writes their kind of young adult. They're set in a world with vampires and werewolves and stuff, but it's they're kind of comedy of errors and their mysteries and steampunk werewolf nonsense.
Ooh.
And it's awesome. Her name is Gail Carriger. And it's spelled Gail Carriger, but she goes with a hard G on the second G.
Okay.
But they're the Paracel. It's like the Paracel Protectorate, I think is what it's called.
And hilarious.
It's full of like bustles and steampunk and typewriters and dirigibles. And the vampires are all super cool. And the werewolves are all super kind of dumb, but with hearts of gold. And
that's exactly how I would do it.
Yeah. That's it. I mean,
they're like, dogs. They're kind of like dogs.
Yeah, they're dogs. Like, they are literally like dogs where you're just like, no, I can help you. No, I just gotta, I'll be right back. I gotta go run real fast. And they gotta run around.
That's so awesome.
You know what you might like if you like any kind of my favorite series right now in the reread world?
Yeah.
Lois McMaster Bujold. She is a Minneapolis author, science fiction. She won a Hugo and a Nebula for the first three. And she does a sort of a gender sexuality thing that I've made Andy listen to probably 9 of them now. And he's like, I'm a little uneasy in how she uses the word, this gender word. And I was like, get over it. Her heart's in the right place.
Okay.
And she didn't know that it was going to be a they, them world, Andy. And so there was no way to know. But Lois McMaster Bujold wrote, and it's too bad about the fact that, so the first novella, they're short novels, right? It's called, I think, Shards of Honor is the first one, and Barry R. And they are grouped together in something called Cordelia's Honor. And here's the thing about the words Cordelia's Honor with the cover that is on it. It looks like a romance novel.
Yeah.
It looks dumb.
Yeah.
And it isn't. So,
don't judge a book by its cover.
Yeah, what I do almost always.
Yeah, I'm just like everybody does. That's why.
This looks good. I think I'm gonna do this one.
Yeah, anyway, that's why I spent like 9 different passes at a album cover that's going to take place in a 1-inch by 1-inch square. It's like.
Exactly. So, yes, by the way, talking to Ophira Eisenberg, and it's Ophira, O-P-H-I-R-A-E, on everywhere. And just, you get it.
On everywhere.
Okay. On everywhere. So, and it'll be in the notes.
So I like these, you know, I feel like with the Kinky Friedman and the Lawrence Block and even this Stephanie Blum series, the Janet Ivanovich, is that I like the fact, it's so funny that you just said this. Writer you like is, did you say, you said Minneapolis, right?
Yeah.
Minnesota.
Yeah.
So, you know, I live in New York, so I kind of love this like unrealistic, but yet I still recognize the places that they're talking about, mm-hmm. settings.
Yeah.
And I don't know Trenton, New Jersey, but it's close enough that they talk about Newark. Like I love stuff in a setting too, that I'm a little bit familiar with. I had no idea I would be that person.
It does. Right. It's so weird that's the jam, right? So,
yeah.
But it is interesting because she doesn't set any of them anywhere near Minneapolis.
Okay.
Lois McMaster Bujold, because they're all space. Though it is interesting.
I was going to say.
Because it literally is space opera. It is like there's big space battles. There's big hand to hand combat. There is love interest. There's philosophy and political intrigue, but it's all, you know, like some people love, like I love Dune. I just reread Dune. Dune is written by Frank Herbert, and Dune has this intensity to it that wants to be the Politburo. In 1967, right? That's what Dune wants it to be.
Yeah.
I don't want to read the minutes of the Politburo from 1967. I would like you to have sort of an overview of the political situation and then put it in terms of, and this, you know, you can make fun of me and just say, oh, well, it's a girl. But the thing is because it's not that I don't enjoy Dune. It's just that it's not something I would ever read to stop the voices in my head.
Right.
You know?
That is such a great way of putting it. What do you read to stop the voices in your head? Right. And sometimes when I really have to, like, take in information on a certain level, like, I used to really like historical fiction.
Yeah.
Because I felt like I got a little bit of everything. But then I just found that wasn't working to do this express need to basically scratch this itch, which is stop it.
Yeah.
Take me to a world where we're just eating donuts, solving crimes, and burgling people's houses. And, you know, I love, I remember in the Lawrence Block, whatever, when I was reading of that series, there was like 3 pages on just how the different locks were being picked. And to me, that was poetry. I loved it.
Yeah. And it was super fun. And you were like, I need more, not like sort of, it was, and if it's well written, if it's lightly written, you know, and you're just like, no, that's exactly what I want.
I do think there is an art, and maybe it is not highlighted enough because, as I said at the beginning of this, I was like, oh, is it a guilty pleasure? And you were very nice to be like, what is a guilty pleasure? I said, oh, it's pedestrian. You go, well, come on, maybe it's all the rest of the people are being pedestrian. But maybe it's also that I just think that I should be reading things that are highly intelligent and that have non-closure and are basically not following like the kind of narrative arcs that we learn about in grade school.
Great. I'm not going to read Cormac McCarthy. It's never happening. I'm sure it's poetry, but there's just like, there's, it's this, and some people love it, you know, like Foster Wallace. What's his name?
Oh yeah. David Foster Wallace. Sure.
David. I always like George Wallace. No, George Foster. And but David Foster Wallace is for me, not the thing to, you know, I'm just like, I know that he's snarky. I know that he is, you know, that it's intelligent, But it is depressing.
Yeah.
You know? And when I read fiction, when I watch fiction, I need the hero to kind of win. I need it to end. I know it's like reality television. Some people love it because it does something for them, right?
Yes.
But for me, I already know people that are making terrible life choices.
Possibly. I am with you on that one. I will say, though, I guess it's reality television. I liked Project Runway. I can watch some HGTV.
You like crafty stuff?
I like watching people do things.
Okay.
And I like seeing that they're good at it. I find the baking show. Of course, I like the baking show. Are you kidding me? The baking show is great. Come on.
There's also a glass blowing show that's very nice.
Come on.
Yeah. Great British Glass Blow Off or whatever. I don't know what it's called, but it's also on Netflix. There's an Antiques Roadshow kind of thing called The Repair Shop on Netflix, where they take an antique, they bring it to this guy with a Cockney accent, and he's got a team, and they fix your chair, or your doll, or your clock, and then they give it back to you. Voila! And it's heartwarming as all fuck. So love it.
Yeah, so I like watching people that are doing things well. I feel that like really interesting. I don't like the side of it, and that's why the British Baking Show, we all know that we like that this for the same reason. It doesn't have that like grossly like completely ridiculous competitive aspect where people are willing to make asses of themselves because they know it will give them more film, more camera time.
Right. There's no one going, well, what do you think about this? How about if you lose? What about if you lose? What if you lose?
Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
And just giving people heart attacks. Yeah.
I remember watching a version of Top Chef in Canada a few years ago. I was in Canada seeing some family and I was watching. I was like, oh, they have Top Chef Canada. Of course they have Top Chef Canada. And there was the first episode of the series and there was one person, I'm calling them a character because I think they all are characters, who...
right.
was immediately snarky and talking about how he was better than everybody and dissing this person and putting down that person and just being so over the top. And of course, from my now versed in watching American reality television, I looked at them and I go, well, that's the guy who's the star of the show.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's what they want.
That's what they want. And he wasn't very good. And they all tasted everyone's creation at the end of it. And he did not score well. And he was cut. And I was like, oh my God, Canadian television doesn't understand reality.
Doesn't understand ratings. That guy, you keep that jackass.
That's your guy. Now you just got these well-meaning people. You're sunk.
You're sunk. So mystery. Have you tried any romance novels?
I haven't tried romance novels. It's so funny because I know so many people that I really respect and love who talk about them and say that, you know, there's great ones that I would enjoy. But I need action.
Yeah. And the crazy thing is the best way I've ever heard it defined was I read a nonfiction book about romance novels when I was trying to write a satire of a romance novel.
Yeah.
And the way she put it, I forget what it's called. It was like bosoms and it was literally like some sort of shit name to go. Yeah. And she went to Wellesley or she went to somewhere, some fancy East Coast college. And she comes home and her mom's like, what are you, have you decided what you're going to study? And she goes, yeah, I'm going to do women's studies and women literature. And she goes, oh, are you going to read any romance novels? She says to her mom, you mean those Fabio books? And her mom said, you mean books written by women for women about women? You don't want to read any of those.
That's not your street, but yeah. Right.
Yeah, okay. So, all right. And so she said to her mom, fine, give me a syllabus. And her mom gave her a syllabus. And she now writes romance novels. And there's a woman who writes, and this, I am sorry, her name is Sherry Thomas, and I love her mystery novels.
Yeah.
Her romance novels are not great for me.
Okay.
Other people like them. Her mystery novels are epic. There, it is called, it's a Sherlock Holmes, a Lady Sherlock Holmes.
I'm in. I'm 100%. We cracked the code.
We might have cracked a code here, because here's the thing. The fifth one just came out.
Okay, and I love this. That means there's more in my future. Dynamic and living.
And it is Sherry Thomas, and it is, what the hell? The Lady Sherlock series. It's out by Penguin. The first one is called, and the thing is they're sort of, the first one is sort of you know how whenever anybody does their own Sherlock Holmes series, they go back to Sherlock Holmes and just try to recreate one of the stories, and this one did not do it. It's called A Study in Scarlet Women is the first Scarlet Women.
And I love that title.
And it is about essentially an autistic woman who is Charlotte Holmes. And she does not, she's gentry, right? So she's not a fancy lady, but her family is poor. She is eidetic. She has an eidetic memory, and she has all the Sherlock Holmes things in Victorian England. Guess how that works out? And she's like, I can't get married. I don't want to. It's not good. And so she makes a deal with her shitbag father that she will try. But if it doesn't work, he will give her her dowry, essentially, to go to school so that she can get a respectable job as a headmistress or something. And right. And so it's such. And it happens in the beginning, so I don't think it's a spoiler thing, where she's just like, he reneges on it. So she decides that the only way that she can get out of him just marrying her off is if she loses her virginity to a married guy. So he can't make the person marry her. So she picks just some dude that she knows and gets laid and gets caught. But she didn't mean to get caught. She meant to use it as blackmail. But she got caught, so she gets banished, and then things happen, and she becomes Sherlock Holmes.
I love this.
It's my favorite. I'm reading the sixth one just came out. The first one's amazing. The third one's amazing. The fifth one's great. This one is amazing. So I think two and four were just good.
Right. Fine.
I mean,
I would, if someone said that about watching my act, I would be thrilled.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking with Ophira Eisenberg. And I have to tell you, this is just, it's been a freaking delight.
Oh my God. I didn't know that I was going to get so much help. I know that.
Oh my, I read almost anything, and a lot of it is only to stop the voices.
Yeah.
So,
oh my goodness,
I'm gonna get this Lawrence Block thing for sure.
Yeah, we should in a different life, or maybe this one, we should open up a bookstore and redo the categories of books based on this kind of stuff, which
right,
is
the emotions that you wish to feel when you read it.
Right. Exactly.
My 95-year-old great aunt loves cowboy romance novels, and so when I go to a Barnes & Noble and I buy. I'm like, what are the new cowboy romance novels? And I try to get her. She's 95.
Yeah.
So I try to, and she likes modern romance novels. So I try to find one where, you know, it's essentially, you know, it's a Hallmark Christmas movie, essentially.
Sure.
Like some woman who's a CEO has come back to her hometown in Montana, and the sheriff is an old flame. And she's got to, you know, deal with her father's, you know, ranch.
Affairs or something.
Yeah. Well, right. And she's like, I just need to sell this ranch and get back to my life in Upper the West Side of Manhattan. And she ends up, you know, falling in love with the sheriff and getting laid. And they end up, and she's like, you know, I'm going to stay here. And what I like about, I think I did a Jen Kirkman Hallmark Christmas movie one where she was like, my favorite thing is that they don't stay. They always go back to New York because she has the good job.
Oh my God. That's hilarious. That's hilarious. Someone's got to pay these taxes.
Exactly. This is we'll keep it as the second house. And yeah.
I'm going to have to hop off, but listen.
Yeah. Okay. This
I'm
going to
read
amazing.
All of these things. I'm going to read right. all these things.
And everybody, look forward to Ophira Eisenberg's new album coming out on 800 Pound Gorilla. Listen to mine. Feel free to buy the download when that happens. I think
you
it's today
it.
That it's available for buying. And then just a month ago, when this comes out, Lori Kilmartin's album came out on 800 Pound Gorilla.
We are so lucky.
We are super lucky. Thanks for being on the show. And Rangers, you know the rules out there. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat. My hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?